Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a long overdue appreciation of that fine progressive intellectual and class traitor, Gore Vidal. I hope you'll stay tuned. Howard Zinn died in January 2010. Then Gore Vidal died in July 2012. I'm trying not to hold Barack Obama personally responsible for these major losses, but they did occur on his watch, to say nothing of a whole bunch of other offenses. But I digress. I come not to damn Caesar, but to praise Gore Vidal. Vidal was a good novelist, playwright, and screenwriter, and a very good historian, political and social critic, and public intellectual. He studied in depth ancient Rome, the young United States, and the U.S. since World War II. His background was patrician, his politics progressive, which is why I jokingly called him a class traitor at the show's beginning. His style of writing and speaking was graceful, elegant, and informed by his substantial study of history and politics. He was generally considered a homosexual, though he thoroughly disliked that term. He disliked it in part because homosexual is an adjective, not a noun, and in part because it suggests something essential rather than a preference. He bypassed both problems by referring to himself as a homosexualist. Alas, this better term never caught on. He was grandson of Senator Thomas Gore of Oklahoma, which made him cousin to Senator Al Gore. Gore Vidal's mother remarried financier Hugh Oakenclaw. And then Jackie Kennedy's mother did the same. So Gore and Jackie were more or less cousins. Gore was a frequent guest at the Kennedy White House. Like his fellow progressive Michael Parenti, Gore Vidal studied and admired the Roman Republic. Alas, the Republic degenerated and metastasized into the Roman Empire, and the empire collapsed from its own bloated weight, as all empires do. Vidal and Parenti were among the first in the later 20th century to insist that the United States had clearly become an empire, to the country's great detriment and to the world's great detriment. On New World Notes, we've heard many hours of Michael Parenti, but almost nothing of Gore Vidal. I'll try to make amends today. Today we'll hear parts of two interviews. The first was conducted in January 2005, the time of W. Bush's second inauguration. This is after the invasion of Iraq and before the great crash of the economy. The interviewer is Robert Knight. Since 2005, the administration has changed, but all of Vidal's observations still apply. The capitalist greedheads are still in charge, elections are still corrupt, perpetual war is still the order of the day, the war drums against Iran continue to beat, and Russia, inexplicably, is still proclaimed our evil enemy. Vidal said all of these things then. He could just as well have been talking about today. From 2005, here is Gore Vidal.
What does this new Bush term bode?
I should think it bodes for the destruction of the United States of America. Certainly, the Republic, as we understood the Republic, based upon the Constitution of 1789 and the Bill of Rights, has been pretty much shredded over the last 5-6 years. Can't blame the Bushes entirely for this, because things have been going wrong for a long time. I would like to point out there is no war other than the one that the president unilaterally is waging against two weak countries against a weak political system, weak Congress, which does not protest. Only Congress may declare war. Congress hasn't. They've given him certain powers along the way. But this is not wartime. He says, I'm a wartime president. That means I can take your money and I can lock you up and I can do anything I want and I'll send you to Guantanamo if I feel like it and I think you're a terrorist. Now, we have a fool like that in charge of us. The surprising thing about the last election is the way that it went. I would have thought as this moment, something like 56% of the American people think we should never have gone to war in Iraq, and those numbers were rising as the election drew near, I would have thought we'd be voting against this war, because it is simply a Bush war. It has nothing to do with the American people. We were never in danger from weapons of mass destruction. We are not in danger, really, from anybody except an administration that has fallen in love with war because of the special powers that it gives the government to do whatever it pleases, getting rid of the Bill of Rights, due process of law, locking people up without telling them why they're being locked up, not only foreigners, but Americans here. I mean, this is the most illegal series of events in the history of the United States. We've had some hairy times in the past, but nothing to compare to this. So what have we to look forward to? Well, like everybody else, I've been following the Iran caper, which I have been predicting for quite some time. That was on the drawing boards, contingency plans, as they call them at the Pentagon, that we would go after Iran. They've got a lot of oil. They have a lot of enemies among neoconservatives who have pretty much taken over the Pentagon and the running of the war. The president doesn't seem to understand what is happening, or if he does, he is really culpable. And here we are going to start a war in the middle of one that isn't a war, but people are dying, so that's technically, that is a bellicose situation and a tragic situation for those at risk. So instead of talking about how the hell we get out of the mess that we are in the Middle East, specifically Iraq and Afghanistan, we're now talking about going into Iran, which has been a dream for some time, of the oil and natural gas hustlers who have seized power in the United States of America, now govern us through a brain-dead Congress, all of their party, paid for by corporate America, and a Supreme Court, which is not interested in justice and will not check in on this issue. We have no weapons legally. So the Constitution is gone. Where would you turn? And I ask anybody listening to this, if you were really in trouble, whom would you turn to? Well, your congressman isn't going to help you. He's helping out General Motors or whoever paid for his election. You can't turn to the executive branch because they run concentration camps and they don't like dissent. And the courts, they're pretty expensive at the lower courts, and the highest court is not on our side, to put it as tactfully as I can. So here we are headed for absolute disaster. And it is very apparent, and most thoughtful people I come across are pretty much aware of it. One thing, you know, the United States was always terribly good at business. Sometimes we were called materialistic and too much so, as opposed to spiritual other countries, not one of which I have ever visited, but I assume there must be some. But we are materialistic, and business is our business. Well, look at the debts that we have run up. We can't pay the cost of this war day by day without borrowing money, and nobody wants to buy our treasury bonds. Or will we have the money in the future to service those bonds by paying the interest on the debts? Now, I see there's a whole raft of pieces coming out in the press saying it is quite clear that the future, I've been writing this for many years, that the future now belongs to India, China, and Japan. They have the money. We've outsourced everything, including, it seems to me, the telephone company, to these countries to help us out, or to sometimes to buy our treasuries. buy our goods, but we don't seem to make much of anything anymore. So we are outsourced, we are non-productive, we are deeply in debt, and now we're going to go to war against Iran, a brilliant culture, by the way, that we know nothing about because education is considered, you know, just not the thing. So we don't know about other countries. But Persia was one of the greatest civilizations that ever came forth on the planet. And they are smart, and they have atomic weapons. Now we're pretending, as we pretended with Iraq, that they're longing to blow us up because we're so prosperous and we have liberty and freedom and democracy. None of these things that we do have, but nevertheless, that's the official line for the administration. They've never explained why it was, if Saddam Hussein had had these weapons, which he did not have, why he would want to blow us up. Now, we know why Osama bin Laden hit us, because he wrote a lot of editorials to that effect, and sent us lots of unpleasant messages why he hated us. It was on religious grounds. He's a religious zealot, and he was doing a religious job. We're doing a job for the oil and gas business. And that is the people who are making money out of this, and God knows how it is going to end, but we, the American people, are going to be the losers.
One of the key elements of U.S. policy is torture. Does that indicate a new relationship of the United States with the world?
Well, it's pure barbarism. I mean, it's, symbolically, it's interesting that regions of the United States are rejecting Darwin and evolution. Well, I can see why. We have a substantial minority in the United States which hasn't advanced much beyond the baboon. And these ignorant people are full of hatred of other people, particularly those brighter than they are, and would like to take vengeance on them. So it's nice that we're rejecting evolution and we are meanwhile going back to the Stone Age with torture. The killing of innocent populations, attacking countries which have done us no harm. This is insupportable. I was watching on C-SPAN the other night. They showed inaugural addresses from Franklin Roosevelt to the president. And Roosevelt, needless to say, he's the American genius. And he spoke of everything from Social Security, or intimated it. But it starts with Truman. Truman is starting to talk about a terrible enemy. He followed Roosevelt, as we remember. And Truman is already starting the Cold War because the United States, our rulers at that time, Roosevelt has just died and had made some agreements with Stalin and Russia, which might have kept the world quite peaceful and we could have avoided the Cold War. Well, Truman got rid of those because he had been convinced by certain people who'd made a lot of money out of the war that we should be forever armed, perpetually at war for a perpetual peace. So there we are on top of the world, economically, militarily. We have the atomic bomb. Nobody else has it. And here is Harry Truman. Got to watch out. There's this godless, atheistic nation out there that wants world conquest. Well, the Russians, you know, didn't want much of anything then except to recover the 20 million people that they had killed in World War II. They weren't going anywhere, but we saw to it that they would arm. We saw to it they'd be frightened. We saw to it that they became enemies. So we've been creating enemies ever since. And now we're taking on 1 billion Muslims. Isn't that brilliant? Just really brilliant. Yeah, 1 billion people who will hate us. And it'll take several generations for them to get over that.
Democracy as a tool of United States foreign policy and statecraft is the proclaimed basis of these spreading wars. What is your assessment of that claim?
Well, since the United States has never been a democracy, and since the Founding Fathers did not want a democracy, I say this to the wonder sometimes of many audiences, but the word democracy does not appear in our Constitution. We are a republic, and a rather conservative republic interested in, at the beginning, in white men of property having a safe place to do business in. Later, the franchise is spread. But we are not a democracy. These elections, and why is it that most of our people don't want to vote? They know that they don't have anything to vote for. In the end, Kerry sounded just like Bush. They were both in favor of the war. Now, the one thing that the senator, the governor of Vermont proved was that there was a huge anti-war party. The Americans have always, we as a people, believed in minding our own business, not in attacking other countries. We had enough to do at home and so on. This has all been imported, and this all comes out of corporate America, out of a ghastly educational system, and we now have a government which is not only not representative of the American people, even as republics go, but nowhere near a democracy. But democracy is a nice word. It's like ketchup. You can put it on everything. We are bringing democracy to Iraq, and we'll bring it to Iran, and one day it may actually come to the United States, but I don't think any of us will live that long.
I'm wondering if you can look back over your knowledge of prior presidents and put George W. Bush in context.
I don't see that you can compare him. He doesn't come out of any political system that we've ever tried before. He wasn't elected the first time around in the year 2000. That was a faked election, and he was brought in by corrupt practices. He may have been the second time, or he may not have, but whatever it was, the presidential election was not fought on any issues. The war, the morality of the war, and the wisdom of the war, and the wisdom of our techniques used against foreigners, like torture and concentration camps, none of this was part of the public debate. We were talking about abortion, homosexual marriages. Aren't these great topics? These are really great topics for a great people. On the march with atomic weapons to be discussing. There was so much really to talk about, and neither Kerry nor Bush was about to do it, and they both approved of the war because their advisors, certainly Kerry's advisors, had told him that. The result is we are going on. I had a title of a little book called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. I didn't know how prophetic that title was. This is perpetual war. And after Iran, we'll make Russia angry at us, or somebody else out there. God help us if we make China angry at us. There are much more of them than there are of us. This war will end in our defeat, and that is why I want us to get out of it. And I want us to bring the troops home, and I want us to try and invent an educational system so that really maniacs don't get in charge of the levers of power.
Can you look at what you think the administration means in terms of domestic policy?
It's the last gold rush. It was 1849, I think. I'm out here in California as I speak to you. California filled up with people because they discovered gold, and the gold rush was on. Well, the gold rush is now on. Now, the last pile of gold in the United States is the money that we have given, I, since the age of 16, which is quite a long time ago. It's when I first worked and paid Social Security. The gold rush is for the bankers and the brokers and the people with mutual funds can get their hands on Social Security money. So you begin with a series of lies, the way they began the Iraq war. Saddam Hussein has nuclear weapons. He's going to use them immediately. We've got to act fast. Stop him. So people fell for that. Now we hear 2018, Social Security, there won't be any money left. We've got to start to fix it now. We'll privatize it. What does that mean? We'll hand all the money in Social Security over to Wall Street. They'll invest it for you and every man a king. You will end up a rich capitalist, which is the dream of every good American. Well, you're going to end up a very poor capitalist because they're going to take that money. They will lose it as they always do. I've never known any boom, certainly a bubble as big as this one would be, that doesn't break. It is totally impractical. It cannot work. All we have to do is look across the water at Great Britain. Thanks to Mrs. Thatcher, they tried something like that too, privatizing a certain amount of retirement money for people of modest means as they got older. They found out they've lost all the money. Well, the money just didn't hold up. It couldn't bear up with the changes in the marketplace. That's very well known. Not that our media would tell us, because our media is totally corrupt. It's owned by the same people who are in the gold rush. So they're going to keep telling us, oh, Social Security's finished. It's just absolutely finished. We've got to go privatize it. And they'll talk about the great success in England, where it's a disaster. And the British are talking about our Social Security system as it now works as being the ideal. Simultaneously, our president, acting for his wealthy friends on Wall Street, is telling us that it's about to fail. Well, it's doing quite well, and the only danger to it is not going to be underpopulation of workers. It is going to be people like Bush and Cheney. They are gold rush people, and this is the gold mine.
I'm wondering what message in a bottle you might leave for future sanity squads who rummage through the rubble of our contemporary times.
Do as our ancestors said, not as we did.
Gore Vidal, talking to Robert Knight in January 2005. Let's hear a brief bit of an earlier interview with the Australian program Dateline. This is from March 2003, shortly before Bush launched a war on Iraq.
In the past few years, you've shifted from being a novelist to principally an essayist, or in your own words, a pamphleteer. It's almost the reverse of most writers' careers. Why the shift for you?
Why the shift in the United States of America, which has obliged me since I've spent most of my life marinated in the history of my country? And I am so alarmed by what is happening with our global empire and our wars against the rest of the world. It is time for me to take political action. And I think anybody who has a position, has a platform, must do so. It's also a family tradition. My grandfather lost his seat in the Senate because he opposed going into the First World War. Then he won it back 10 years later on exactly the same set of speeches that he'd lost it. So attitudes change, attitudes can be changed. But now I am not terribly optimistic that there is much anyone can do, that the machine is set to go. And to have a major depression going on, economic really collapse all around the world, and begin a war against an enemy that has done nothing against us other than what our media occasionally alleges, this is lunacy.
Over the past 40 years or so, you've written about the undermining of the foundations of the Constitution, liberty, human rights, free speech. Indeed, you've probably damned every administration throughout that period on that score. Is George Bush really any worse?
No, he certainly is worse. We've never had a kind of reckless one who may believe, and there's a whole theory now that he's inspired by love of our Lord, that he is an apocalyptic Christian who will be going to heaven while the rest of us go to blazes. I hope that isn't the case. I hope that's exaggeration. No, we've had... The problem began when we got the empire, which was brilliantly done in the most Machiavellian, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, way by Franklin Roosevelt. With the winning of World War II, we were everywhere on earth, our troops, and our economy was number one. Europe was ruined. And from that, then in 1950, the great problem began when Harry Truman decided to militarize the economy, maintain a vast military establishment in every corner of the earth, meanwhile denying money to schools, really to the infrastructure of the nation. So we have been at war steadily since 1950. I did one of my little pamphlets was a perpetual war for perpetual peace. How that worked. I mean, we've gone everywhere. We have the enemy of the month club. One month it's Noriega, king of drugs. Another one it's Gaddafi. We hated his eyeliner or something and killed his daughter. We moved from one enemy to another, and the press, the media, has never been more disgusting.
You charge what you call the Cheney-Bush junta with empire building. But hasn't America always been an empire, and isn't this junta just a little bit more honest about it? They aren't shy in proclaiming their belief that America has something worth exporting.
I prefer hypocrisy to honesty any time, if hypocrisy will keep the peace. No, we have had an imperial streak from the very beginning. But it didn't get going until 1898, when we picked a war with Spain because we had our eye on Spanish colonial possessions, specifically the Philippines, which got us into your part of the world, into Asia. And from that moment on, we really were a global empire. And then by the time of the Second World War, we'd achieved it. It was all ours. Now, what is going on now is kind of interesting. We've never seen anything like it. There's a group of what they call neoconservatives. Most of them were old Stalinists, and then they were Trotskyites, and then finally they are neoconservatives now. They preach openly, and they're all over the War Department, as we used to call it, the Defense Department. Mr. Wolfowitz is one of their brains, and they write really extraordinarily frightening overviews of the United States and the rest of the world, that we, after all, have all the military power that there is, and let's use it. Let's take the earth. It's there for us. They are talking glibly now about, after they get rid of Saddam, which they think is going to be a very easy thing to do, well, Iran is next. One of them, not long ago, made a public statement, it's time we really had regime change in all the Arab countries.
Well, Bush has claimed that the American belief in liberty will deliver a free and peaceful Iraq. Even with the stench of oil in the air, George Bush probably can deliver that, a free and peaceful Iraq, that is. Isn't there a legitimate case to be argued that there's a greater good at work here?
There is no greater good at work. We cannot deliver it. Only the Iraqis can deliver that. You don't go in and smash up a country, which we will do, and gain their love so that they then want to imitate our highly corrupt political system. We saw what happened in November 2000 when Albert Gore won the popular vote by 600,000. They actually won the electoral vote of Florida. But a lot of dismal things happened and denied him the election. So that's what happened there. So for us to talk about a democracy that we're going to translate into other lands is the height of hypocrisy and is simply foolish. You don't invent governments for other people.
And here we must pause our tribute to the late writer, essayist, and public intellectual Gore Vidal. Vidal died in 2012, and we are the worse for it. Vidal's words are taken from the programs 5 O'Clock Shadow and Dateline. Thanks to all concerned. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. On the web, find us at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimi non-carborundum, try to live each day as though the truth were true, and please come back again next week. Till then.